On this week's episode, we dive into business planning for outdoor events with John McMahon. So we go over how to host a large outdoor event, and we're referring to the large events such as concerts, EDC, things like that. John is an expert in those events, the financial risks in these outdoor events. And at the end, we go into some of the one of the biggest cash flow problems that you need to consider if you're looking to take on this type of industry or business. As always, if this episode helps you or brings you value, please do me a favor, share it with a friend. Thank you and enjoy the show. Welcome to Build Your Wealth Muscle, a podcast dedicated to helping fitness entrepreneurs build wealth by saving taxes and growing their money. Each episode will break down different strategies in the areas of business, tax, and retirement planning specifically for your coaching business. Disclaimer, the topics covered in this podcast are for educational purposes only. This is not advice for your specific situation. Please consult a qualified financial or tax professional before making any changes to your financial or tax situation. Now here's your host, certified financial planner and tax advisor, Pat Darby. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Build Your Wealth Muscle. This is episode 85. So if you're first listening, there's two type of show formats. Well, first of all, welcome if you're new. There's two show formats. The one is a solo. It's just me giving you pretty in-depth areas of specific like finance, tax, cash flow planning for businesses. And then there's today. We have a guest, and the guests are going to be either colleagues of yours that have very similar businesses, or they support your business like in accounting, legal, sales, marketing. And today we have John McMahon from MFB Events. I think it's going to be pretty cool because he runs events not too dissimilar to what just occurred here, like in EDC. John, welcome to the show.
Pat, thanks for having me. I appreciate the invite.
Absolutely. I'm going to take these off because I think I'm hearing myself, but you can keep yours on if you're good, but I was hearing myself. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, born and raised in the Northeast, specifically New Jersey, right outside of New York City, and started in the finance industry, Wall Street guy for a few years, and I realized I hated it, but I had the entrepreneurial spirit and that stayed within a industry that my parents started when I was a child, specifically concessions. And I was literally working at the age of 10, 11 years old as a street hustler in New York City, making fresh squeezed lemonades, cheesesteaks at famous festivals like St. Gennaro's Festival down in Little Italy and 9th Ave and Broadway and down in the Village. And that's how I cut my teeth with an entrepreneurial spirit, which I didn't even know was being instilled upon me. So when I decided to leave Wall Street at the age of 25 years old, I remembered those roots and said, all right, let me take this to another level. And it just kind of happened that way. I never looked back. Here we are 27 years later. And no regrets.
That's pretty cool. So you got out to Vegas how long ago?
So I've been in Vegas for 3 years. I moved out from New York City during the pandemic. I think a lot of us have our story when it comes to COVID and how it affected us, and I'm no different. And I realized I wanted a change in life, and it took a worldwide pandemic to slow me down. So I came to Vegas to calm down and to reset life. So 3 years in Vegas.
Very cool. Now, we met at the gym, but you have not just real estate background, but tell me about the events you do.
So I had what is referred to as a master concessionaire. So I have a multi-year contracts with Live Nation, AEG Live, Town Square Media, major production industry companies that do stuff like EDC, Coachella. I was involved in for a couple of years, the Hangout Festival down in Alabama, Governor's Ball in New York, Mountain Jam upstate New York, et cetera, Lollapalooza in Chicago. That's the type of stuff I got involved in. And I was the liquor license holder for events like this. So if that's you awesome. Ever gone to one of these big festivals outside and go up to a tent and pay $18 for a beer and $12 for a hot dog. That was me. I controlled all that for the big shots, if you will. I was the middleman. So as a master concessionaire, AEG would contact me and go, "Hey, John, we got the Ring of Fire Festival going on in Oklahoma, Kid Rock, Lady Gaga, and Seether or something. It could be headlining for 3 days. We're going to have 100,000 people build the infrastructure from a concession standpoint, bar and food." And I would literally fly to that location a year in advance and start networking and meeting people and mapping it all out. There's a lot that goes behind it. Of course, whatever they told me in terms of numbers, meaning production, like AEG or Live Nation, I just divided the numbers in half because they're all liars. To be honest, it's a vicious, vicious business. There's a reality behind the reality. And I think a lot of people could relate to that in what they do for a living. And in this industry is no different, except it's probably worse. It's a very narcissistic industry because it's, look at it. It's exciting. It's fun. People want to go on a weekend and party and rage, but it's a big, big business.
So there's two segments to it I wasn't aware of. So you're as the event coordinator, you're not bringing the talent and the tickets. You just need to plan the infrastructure and you hold the liquor license. So they can't do it without you, but they have all the crowd essentially that Correct. Pays them, and then they pay you. So you're a vendor for them.
Correct. And I wish they paid me. It's a revenue share. There's a reason why, a beer is $14 or $15. There's a reason why a hot dog is, $12. It's all on revenue share. If you ever hear of contract disputes, whether it be the NBA, the NHL, or NFL, and they're talking about concession contracts, there's a couple different things that go behind that. But they are talking about revenue shares when it comes down to a Coca-Cola or a Pepsi. There's a big money involved in it. So if you do an event with 100,000 people or even 50,000 people, and half those people buy two or three beers a day at $10 a beer, you do the math. Yeah. It adds up really quick. Sure. And that is just on beer. So my job was to be able to create a per cap. And basically what a per cap is if you and I went to a concert, and to your point, we buy a ticket for $100, AEG or Live Nation or whoever's the producer for that matter, has that. Okay, we got the $100 for these two guys. That's $200. Now we go to the concert. What else are they going to buy? How can we raise that? How can we double that? So I want to make sure I have enough bar. I want to make sure I have enough food available that entices people like you and I to go up to that bar and spend. Well, you might be a Jack Daniels drinker. I might be a vodka drinker. So-and-so might be a Bud Light drinker or Coors drinker. How do we make sure that when people are coming, they have a good experience to buy that beer or to buy that drink, and they come back over and over? And I was good at it. And you sell the sizzle, not the steak. So attract the bartenders, more access, better signage, a decent refill program, whatever it might be. And next thing you know, you just spent another $100 on alcohol. So that per cap would be $100. It's a per head. When I say per cap, means per head. And I had pretty high per caps in the industry. So that's why they would contact me to create those per caps.
So are they, when they work with someone like you, and like anyone listening who's like trying to do something like that, it's like, obviously it's a huge undertaking. You said you're a year out making mm-hmm. all these plans, but are they hiring you, one, obviously because you have the expertise and the logistics that they may not have, nor do they want to maybe have an internal team, but are they also offloading a lot of risk onto you because they're like, "Oh, this is John's event. You carry your own insurance. If someone gets hurt, that's not our deal. This is our contractor who's responsible." Is that part of it too?
You're a smart man, Pat. That's exactly right. Yeah, they're not going to make you rich. They know exactly the values, but it's all about risk. And they have the carrot that they dangle in front of you. Oh, you want to do Metallica? I got Metallica, you know, like I was involved with the Orion Festival back in Atlantic City, New Jersey. You know, who doesn't want to do Metallica for 3 days or two nights straight? They're going to sell out. You know, you're going to get 40, 50,000 people.
Yeah.
Now it's just a pure numbers game. But I have lost years off my life in figuring this out. Even just ordering ice, you had to scale it, you know. So it's until you're in it. But, you know, when you're dealing with, some scrupulous people out of New Jersey, New York City, ice, I ordered by the tractor trailer load.
Sure.
You know, and there's a melt off. There is, you know, how do you get ice on consignment? You don't. So a truckload of ice, 30, 40 grand. And if I overorder that, that's net loss. That's right on the bottom line in red. You really got to know what you're doing. So you got to be a weatherman. You got to be a fire inspector. You got to be a Board of Health, agent, an IRS consultant, all this stuff internally to make sure you don't go bankrupt in 3 days.
So let's talk about that, because you had, and again, talk about as much as you're comfortable. You just had an event in Arizona.
Yeah.
And you and I were texting about it. There was a rainstorm that was potentially going to derail things.
Yes.
If you're comfortable talking about, like, how'd that event go, but what if the rain was the entire time and the event got canceled? Are you reimbursed for any of your...
So I got involved with this event a couple of years ago. And when I talked to the producer, who wasn't as the level of what we're talking about with other production companies, independent, the first thing I asked her was, how much money do you want to lose?
Smart. I like that. So okay. you start at the bottom end, the worst case.
Exactly. And she looked at me, lose. And I go, yeah. I said, you got to understand this industry. The one thing you can't control, no matter who you are, is the weather.
Sure.
So to your point, you know, 10 hours before doors, we had 2 inches of rain and hail in Arizona. And the odds of that happening is probably 1 in 1,000,000. You got a better chance of hitting the lottery, but it happened and it nearly wiped out the event,
because this is an Arizona
event, correct, in Arizona, and nearly wiped her out financially if it was 10 hours later. Instead, it wiped her out maybe 25% because of the damage, you know, other stopgaps that had to be done, working overnight to make it work. And then finally the sun came out the next day and we rocked it. But you want to talk about a sleepless nights, stressful, all the labor, all the hours, all the money, all the talent, on and on and on and on, to where, like, why am I even doing this? You know, to then it did go off and you're exhausted and you're like, thank God. And I did it. And there's the hook. It's an adrenaline rush high. It's a junkie. It's a heroin addict. It's an alcoholic. It's a sex addict. I hate to make those analogies, but that's exactly what it is. It's that type of high. And that's why people do it, besides the money.
So let's talk about the financial side of things. Again, I'm not asking for specifics, but if someone's listening and they were, you know, they might be looking to have an in-person retreat for their online business or something really big like this, or maybe somewhere in the middle, like they want to do something like you're talking about, but they don't even know how to get started. If you were doing your first one, what's the capital outlay look like? Because I'm guessing they're not fronting the money on their end. So this would probably be a cash outlay until the revenue split. Is that a fair assessment?
Very fair assessment. Another good question. Correct. And that's why, you know, a producer is able to ask and sell and negotiate the way they do, because they're doing it on both ends. They're like, I'm going to throw this party, I'm going to throw this event, throw this concert, whatever you want to define it as. And they go to you as the talent. And you're going, well, I'm Pat. I want X amount per day if you want me on your stage. And then they're going to sell you why you should be on their stage for less. And then you sign a
flat
contract.
Flat or revenue. Like, talent is usually flat or revenue.
That's flat. That's flat. They want to keep that number down.
But they're going to get paid whether that event gets canceled or not, because if rain occurs. So, all right. So
that's correct.
And they're on the hook for that money, not you.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. So they want, that's why they want to keep that number down as much as possible.
That's their risk.
That's their risk. Then they come to people like me, you know, and they say, okay, John, we got Pat. And then he's going to sell 10,000 tickets, or he's going to sell 1,000 tickets, whatever the size of the venue is. And then they're going to negotiate with me off of a percentage. So for everything I make of revenue, I'm kicking back to them. And they're going to tell me how great you are, how many people come. The fans love to drink when they come to Pat's show. They love to party early. They stay late. You're going to make a ton of money, which means they're going to make a ton of money. So I got to take that all within with a grain of salt, because if I take that to truth, I will give them more percentage to nail that contract. I'll say, I'll give you an extra 5 points here. I'll give you an extra 10 points here on the bar because, oh, they got Pat.
Yeah.
Don't believe the hype. margins are margins. Costs are cost. So to me, I would sit there and go, the general audience only has so many hours to drink and eat. They only have so much time to sit there to actually wait at a bar or wait at a burger stand.
Yeah.
And then I want to know how they're going to load in. Who's the parking company? Yeah. Who's doing it? Oh, we have a volunteer organization. Next thing you know, you're waiting in line for 2 hours. You can't get through the gates. That's 2 hours of selling I just lost. I'm making revenue. There's so much that goes behind this.
So you, are you saying you control that front end or no? Like one, you don't, they don't become your customer until they're in the door.
That's correct.
So if there's a bottleneck with, I guess, like the bouncers and the people checking the tickets, mm-hmm. that's a different vendor taking care of that.
100%.
So they can screw you over by having illogistical or illogical
bingo
entrance.
We have all have had this experience. Waiting to get into an event, a stadium or whatever it might be, and the security is a pain in the rear end. There's a big bottleneck, or the port-a-johns. There's a line to wait to go to the bathroom. This is because the producers negotiated very tough. And if I'm the port-a-john guy, I just got taken to the tool shed on a contract. Well, you know what? I'm not going to bring as many, or I'm not going to have as much infrastructure of support. Hence lines, or hence, it's vicious. It really is vicious. I mean, I just went to the Red Hot Chili Peppers concert here in Vegas, and it was one of the worst experiences I've ever had.
Damn.
Not from necessarily the show, but from trying to get a drink and go into the bathroom. They were completely undermanned, understaffed, and they lost a lot of money.
So the bathrooms aren't part of your services either?
No.
You're nope. Just the concession.
I'm so, just the beer guy.
Food and drink.
I stick with alcohol.
So keeping back to like, and either maybe we can either talk about how you got into it, or if someone, I mean, I don't know how long your first event was to now, but if someone's trying to get into it and they don't have the capital in their bank account, how are banks towards these things? Like if you go and say, hey, this is my business, they touch it with a 10-foot pole, or they're like.
Another good question. I hate banks. And there's a reason why. Banks are vicious. They don't give you anything. They're going to take it. Okay. Now I'm not saying you can't leverage out a bank. Don't get me wrong. Okay. But be very careful.
Yeah.
The same insurance. Like I have a huge EDM festival I do back east. I can't get insurance for it. Can't get insurance. It is impossible to a certain degree. Now I'll figure it out. But I got to become an insurance expert and a liability expert. So I don't go bankrupt.
You're underwriting your own policies in these.
To a certain extent, yes. I got to negotiate with the insurance broker who's got a bunch of other companies. It also depends on the states. The states are different.
Sure.
You know, we call ourselves the United States. We're not united. It's 50 separate countries when it comes to this type of stuff with business. And this is what people don't realize till they get in the industry, they're in deep and they're like, what did I just do? So you asked me a question and I was answering in a roundabout way. What would be my advice to somebody if they want to get in this business? Start off very, very small, very slow, and in a location that you're comfortable with. maybe your hometown, your home state, or where you went to college and you had some bandwidth at your university that you could do something in the quad, you know, and support the university, something of commonality that you're comfortable with in terms of knowing people, knowing the environment, knowing the roadways to get in and out. Don't try to go for it all at once. You will destroy yourself financially and mentally.
So sticking with that, like when it comes to the financial end, and again, you don't have to give us dollars. Maybe we can use percentages. So, and you don't give any personal information, but if someone's considering doing it, what is a revenue split they should anticipate? And on, along that lines, like, is that revenue split based on top line? So for example, you said the entertainment company, they have to pay the talent. Mm-hmm. Does that completely come off their share, or they're like, after we pay the talent, then we start our revenue split, or that's totally their risk. You guys are working off the top line.
Yeah, we're working off the top line, totally separate. So I'm not a talent buyer. I don't get involved in that. That's a whole separate entity. On my end, which we would call, let's call them field vendors, you know, the guy that's selling the t-shirts, the person that have the trinkets, you know, the food, the beverage, the alcohol, the stuff that's in my wheelhouse, if you will, that's going to be your revenue share. And depending how good you are a negotiator, and depending on the size of the event, it could be 20 to 35% on the concessions and as high as 50 to 60% on the alcohol in terms of what I'm kicking back, right? I have subcontractors,
sure.
So I'm going to make points off of them. But if you're my pizza guy, as an example, and I'm doing one of these major festivals that I have control, you got to understand, I'm the master concessionaire. I own the rights to the alcohol and the food. I have something that you want. Pat the pizza guy comes along. I said, I got four food courts. I'll give you 20 feet per food court. You got 80 feet of pizza frontage, sole source. That's music to your ears right now. I got to make sure you can produce the pizza now at that type of scale. And you want to charge $10 a slice? Go for it, because that's the going rates right now. $12 a slice because you have a good slice? Go for it. You're going to bring in, if someone wants a slice of pizza, they're buying it from you. And there you go. That's how you make your money, volume. And because I have that, you're going to want to sign a contract with me. I'm going to make some points off of you because I'm going to protect you.
You're doing a revenue split with them too.
That's absolutely.
So the revenue that you generate when from alcohol and food and other concessions, you're not splitting that with the big guys, right? You're only getting a split of the tickets from them. They push it down to you, but are you pushing back up to them as well? Or it's all pooled together?
I get nothing of the tickets.
Oh.
I get retail sales. All retail. So if someone buys a $10 slice from you.
So the ticket sales are their risk with the talent.
Correct. And the staging and the production that goes all behind.
Got it. Mm-hmm. But on your end, so if you sell all the hot dogs and pizza and beer, you have to kick some back to them.
Absolutely.
Got it.
Yes.
So you have your cost structure, because again, they have to actually make the pizza.
Yep.
And they, I'm guessing, keep the cost plus they give you something else. And then you split what they kick to you with the big guy.
It's all correct. It's all off the gross. So if you sell a slice of pizza for $10, right? Obviously, there's going to be state sales tax that comes off of that, right?
Sure.
Now there's a net off of that, the true gross, if you will, after sales tax. X amount percentage goes back to the producers, the guys with the tickets, the guys that did the talent. You know, they're the ones throwing the party.
Yeah.
And for me, bringing you in and managing you, and giving you infrastructure and giving you the resources so you can sell the pizza, I'm going to try to make a spread on that too.
Sure.
A couple points. I'm not going to get rich off of it. I'm just trying to offset some of my costs to bring you in as well, because I have costs. You know,
sure.
I have my staff that has to manage and all that. Sometimes it's break even. Sometimes it's a little in the red, or sometimes I go in the black with it. Again, it all depends on the event. Everything is negotiable. But you are now, as the pizza guy, you're like, well, I got to kick back to the big guy. John's making his little spread in between. So I got to price out my slice to absorb that.
Yeah.
Hence the $10 slice. If you sold it for a $4 or $5 slice, you won't even cover your cost.
Yeah.
You know, so you have to know your numbers. And there's a lot of people that don't. So that's another lesson in business. You know, it always comes down to numbers. And if you don't know your costs, if you don't know your bottom line, you know, and your labor and how that all vets out on a proper P&L per item. Don't do this. Don't do any business for that matter. You're gonna destroy yourself.
So something like EDC that just happened in Vegas, for people who don't know, like we're based in Vegas, if you're new to listening, if that, for whatever reason, let's say weather, if that whole event got canceled last minute, how much would that concession person have lost, if you had to guess?
Wow. Depends on the contract. At an event like that, you're dealing with millions and millions and millions of dollars.
Sure.
Okay. So depending on the contract, if it was my contract and what I would sign, I would take a big hit. Because of the infrastructure, the labor, the warehousing, the trucking, all the infrastructure I had to build, you know, in advance. That's all built in advance. There's a cost behind that. You know, food and alcohol, all that type of stuff at the tractor trailer load. If I don't pop open that tractor trailer load, I ain't buying it. So, you know, if I ordered, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 cases of beer, you know, 5,000 cases of beer, kegs, whatever, however it's going to be retail sold, and I don't tap into it, I ain't buying it. Send it right back to Miller Coors.
So all the vendors take that risk too?
Correct.
So like the pizza guy and the ice and stuff like that, like, yep, you're getting a vendor. So they're each. So I guess from your perspective, when you're spreading the risk, that's how you're doing it. You're saying, correct, well, like, you're going to sell your ass off if this event doesn't go on, mm-hmm, we're out.
Correct. Look, I have the ability, you know, to say do it all as a master concessionaire. Say, hey, yeah, John, why don't you do it all? You be the pizza guy. You be the beer guy. You be the funnel cake guy. You have the rights.
Right.
Do it all. You need an army.
Sure.
You know, this is like going to war. I mean, when I load in on a field, I wear camouflage. I wear a camouflage hat. I mean, I'm like General Patton out there. It's crazy. It's hard to even say this, but it's true. You know, how do I attack this field? How am I going to dissect this field to get as much retail sales within a 7 to 8 hour or 12 hour period? I got to go to war. I'm attacking the crowd is what I'm doing,
yeah,
you know, and I'm using my army, if you will, of the pizza man and the hot dog guy. They're part of my army.
Yeah.
I got to put this over here. I got to put that over there. And this is what the producers look for. Oh, he's a good general. He knows how to get this done. You'll be surprised. I mean, EDC, they ran, look, no offense to EDC, they ran out of water. They ran out of ice at the VIP bars. To a certain extent, it was a shit show. I had bartenders out there. They're texting me in real time, telling me what a mess it is. Wow. And, I won't mention the concession company behind it, but it came off. But I know they lost potential of more revenue.
So they didn't lose money, but they probably lost upside.
Absolutely. Big time. Happens all the time. It's a tough business.
Yeah. It sounds from a cash flow perspective, not just like hitting a home run with the event sounds hard, but if you're in that business, the challenge I see from hearing you explain it is like, okay, you just did an event. Let's say you're Arizona, you hit a home run. You're like, awesome. Everything got paid. You made money. And then you immediately switch to the next event. So you almost feel like potentially I can't spend this cash because I'm about to go to war again. So it seems like a bit of a hot potato, like when you could pull cash off the table and be like, all right, this is for John. Like,
that's right.
Like this is where for my real estate assets or whatever, because you know you need that self-funding since the insurance companies and whatnot are, mm-hmm, skittish, which obviously, yeah, it sounds like there's a lot of risk of injury and stuff with all the people partying and raging. That's a pretty cool business. So what's the next one you got going?
So I have a huge EDM event back east. It's called the Elements Music Festival. It's end of August and it's at the Pocono Raceway.
Very cool.
Yeah, we'll get about 15 to 20,000 people there. That's going to be a banger. It always is. That's the next big one. I have a rodeo event upstate New York. That's more like around 7,500 to 10,000 people. And, you know, so look at the genres and to your point, the way you just dissected, you're right on with that. It is a hot potato when it comes to financial. I ran a debt-free company. I owned everything. I owned my warehouses, had two big commercial warehouses, my trucking, all this stuff. And I did that for a reason, because if I rented it or leased it and I had a bad weekend where it rained, or the producers just didn't sell the tickets they want to sell, or one of the entertainers gets sick and doesn't want to show up. And, you know, these entertainers, if you saw what happened behind stage, you probably would not even buy the records anymore or listen to them. Not all of them. I shouldn't say that. But enough, you'll be surprised.
Sure.
You'll be surprised. Sure. They're humans and with major egos. But with that said, you know, the way I survived is owning it, you know.
You didn't owe anybody when shit hit the fan.
So when shit hit the fan, I didn't lose anything. I didn't make, you know, and I did lose something. Don't get me wrong. But I was able to survive the next weekend and what you just laid out because I owned it.
Yeah.
I learned that the hard way. And that was over 2 decades of accumulating. I mean, my warehouse, I had everything and anything. And this goes beyond just food stuff. You know, I had, you know, stuff that the fire department would expect or a fire truck would carry. It's like, well, wait, you're selling burgers. Why would you carry that? I own it, which means I control it. The more control you have, the more money you're going to make and keep.
So, you made me think of a separate question. If anything, like, you're a smart investor, so are you changing how you approach these events based on this economic climate that we're in?
Absolutely. There's a reason why I even got out of it. I mean, I cherry pick what I want to do now.
Sure.
The biggest thing, labor. You're only as good as your labor. And look at the world we live in right now. You know, especially with COVID, people have woken up to a certain extent what they want to do or don't want to do, you know? So yeah, it sounds exciting. You sit out there for 16 hours in front of a stage and sell beer. Well, who doesn't want to do that? Well, after about 2 hours of doing it, you'll be like, this sucks. What am I doing? What am I doing this for at the age of 28 or 32? You know, you start to wake up a little bit differently. You're tired. Or you're going to go there and be like, all right, yeah, I'm going to sober for a couple hours and then I'm going to take a long bathroom break and I'm going to disappear and go watch a set of music.
That's like the issues you run into with like talent.
Oh, God, yeah.
Are they on commission or are they hourly?
Both.
Okay.
Hourly and tips.
Okay.
Yeah.
Imagine it'd be good if they showed up to work hard. I would imagine it's pretty profitable for them.
Absolutely. Oh, you can make a lot of money. Again, it's the high.
Yeah.
Okay. If I'm chasing a high, what do you think they're chasing?
So if anyone's listening that would want to maybe reach out to you, like what could they make if they were actually a hard worker and not going to flake on you? What could they make on like that Pocono weekend as selling beer, or, you know, assuming they're not in the Bud Light tent?
So like, again, depending on the event, depending on the hours, again, where's the math come in? Just like we've been talking about this whole time, right? It's all about the numbers.
Sure.
But on an event like that, I mean, quite frankly, you can make 700 to 1200 a day, if not more.
And I mean, I went to college in Scranton, so I know if they're making $2,400 a weekend, that's going to go a little ways in that area. So
absolutely. And sometimes more.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And that's why they do it, you know, and then you have all the other stuff, the good and the bad of the entertainment of the event. And you're like, I got the best job in the world. Then you do it next weekend and you make half that because the producers brought in lesser talent. It rains on you.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, this is miserable. I got a bad location with the wrong bar. Why am I not VIP anymore? You know, the reality beyond the reality sets in. If it was all going to be peaches and cream, we'll all be doing it.
What would you do from the first one you've done to now? What would you do differently? Like maybe some mistakes you've made that you learn from, like someone's listening, like what mistake could they avoid that you really valued?
That's a good question. What would I do differently? Well, believe it or not, I think what comes to mind is in the beginning, I probably would have pushed harder at a younger age.
Push harder from what?
Take more risk.
Interesting. More risk.
Yeah.
I would have thought at your younger age, you would have been more risk.
I'm a pretty risky guy because I, you know, knock on wood, I've been pretty successful with it. I push hard. I knew there's a window. There's a window. We all have windows in life. You just got to know when you see the window and whether you're going to jump through it or not.
Yeah.
Whether it be a relationship, whether it be with a job, friends, parents, whatever. Windows come. I knew I had a window. I jumped through it head first, no regrets.
That's awesome.
I've jumped through another window by actually getting out. You know, and when I say get out, I just liquidated a lot of my company. I had a big nightclub in New York City as well, huge nightclub, 40,000 square feet across from Madison Square Garden. So that's a whole nother story at another time. But, you know, I knew when to jump through the window and I knew when to avoid it chopping my head off because it's going to close. And yeah. It's whether it closes after you jump through or in your process of jumping through and get chopped in half. And that's why people don't jump. Fear. So I actually, you know, the more I think about it, I don't think I would have changed a thing.
That's awesome.
You know, I actually have been pretty good with that. It's like that sixth sense type of thing. And it's not like I'm the best in the world or the genius of anything. But for me, I didn't miss a beat. And I had a good partner that helped me along the way. Opposites do attract. He was a totally different type of person, still is to this day, than I am. And that's why it worked. So
are you the gas and he's the brakes? And so
I'm the fire. There's no question about it.
So you guys see things differently.
But I would say, if I was to say the people you work with. So yes, if I was to maybe make some changes or something, I probably would have scaled to a better business sense of the people I was surrounding myself with. Not only personally, but professionally. I put a lot on my own shoulders. I needed more mentorship. I needed someone that got me. I was the leader. I needed someone to lead me. It's great to be a leader, but it gets tiring. It really does.
Do you mentor people now, like that are like young people that want to get into this business? It also probably takes some stuff off your plate.
Yeah, I do. I have mentored. I've done a lot of public speaking as well.
That's awesome.
Especially back in New York City at Pace University and stuff. It's flattering. It feeds ego. But I'm very humble with it because, you know, it's just my nature.
Sure.
It's a way of giving back too. And it's also because of, I wish I had more of that.
Yeah.
When I was in my 20s and going into my 30s, I had to figure it out the hard way, the old fashioned way, just do it and make your mistakes and keep on going forward. If I had some more mature, mentorship, the same stuff would have happened most likely. It just would have been a little bit less of a burden or a little bit less pain. You're still going to get pain. It's still going to be burdensome, but it would have been a little bit less. And that's what I try to do when I talk to people, is try to say, listen, you're going to get nailed, man. I'm telling you right now, you're going to get nailed, but let me try to lessen it a little bit. So when you do get nailed, you don't go down the abyss. You're able to survive it.
That's awesome. So where can people find you either to go to your next event or if maybe they want to work one of your events with you, if they're a hard worker, where can people find you?
Well, listen, I mean, you could go to info@mfbevents.com. That's our general mailbox. You could email me directly at John, J-O-N, so no H, J-O-N, at mfbevents.com. And that's maryfrankboyevents.com. Yeah, I look forward. I'm not a big social media guy. I am on social media, but I keep I lay under the radar these days, but that's by choice. But I do go on social media. John McMahon 13 is my Instagram. That's JONMCMAHON 13. You're not going to be overly impressed with my social media, but that's by design.
Well, I'll put in the show notes. So everyone, if you're driving, you don't have to write that down. In the show notes, you're going to have the MFB events and his email. So
sure. You
guys can find John. Well, thank you so much for joining us. This has been awesome.
I appreciate the invite, Pat. Thank you very much.
All right. And for people to know, I think we'll be at your pool. We're recording this on Memorial weekend, so we'll be at
John's
pool later.
Clothing optional at the pool.
Never mind. I can't.
We're in Vegas.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us this week on Build Your Wealth Muscle. The links mentioned in this episode are available in the show notes. For video clips and more information on tax and retirement strategies for fitness entrepreneurs, please follow my Instagram @ThePatDarby. If you found value in this episode, please do us a favor and share with a friend. If you tag me, that'd be appreciated also. Lastly, for help implementing any of the topics discussed, please book a call. The link is also in the show notes. Thank you again for listening and have a great day.